Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algy, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast. It's Bill and Dennis and Alan, and we brought some friends to the party tonight. So we have Ronnie Schnell, who is a seller of many, many, many records on Sell, Trade, Buy Vinyl, a Facebook group that I'm a part of, and love watching his show. It's great, a lot of fun. And we have Gary and Vonnie Brufack from Xena Records, and they are debuting a new segment right from the store starting tomorrow night, which that'll be Tuesday night, Wednesday night, and then Ronnie's show is on Thursday night, so we'll be talking a little bit more about that. Hey, welcome to the show, guys. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having me. And the Brufach, I think it's awesome that you didn't correct his pronunciation of your name.
Did I say it wrong?
You have to say it like you're an old Jewish guy that speaks Yiddish with a lot of phlegm. Brufach.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, that would be like Ronnie trying to say my name the other day on his show when he was saying Bill Algy. And he finally got it right, so we're even.
I spelt it wrong, so I and I'm a Met fan, so I have AG in my head.
It's just like that crap that grows on the side of your pool. It's just green and nasty.
Yeah. Great. So we have these guys on here because we, at least two of us on this show, two-thirds of the Ages of Rock podcast are collecting vinyl. One-third buys a record about once every 4 years. Maybe he's starting to buy a little bit more, though. It's starting to freak us out a little bit. So, but it's good. So we usually start the show with some album acquisitions, and we thought it would be appropriate for this show. So, Dennis, what do you got, man?
I got two this week. Nothing spectacular. This is kind of cool. This is actually my wife and I. Oh shit! Here, I know I'm off mute. I thought I was on mute. I thought you're gonna be laughing at me. Anyway, I picked up from Target. We went to Target the other night, and Target's starting to get, you know, some records are selling. And I picked up the Charlie Brown Christmas, the Vince Guaraldi. Is that Guaraldi?
Algy, Vince Algy.
Algy. Anyway, it's the cool Christmas music. It's the kind of the jazz stuff. It's got a really cool cover, though. It's kind of that, like the old sports cards, 3D, three-dimensional. It's hard to see on the camera, but it's like, you know, those old sports cards you used to get, you know, out of the, you know, boxes, and you'd see them. And they kind of like, you know, three-dimensional. It's kind of what it looks like. But it is on also on green vinyl, which is kind of cool. And, but you know, we have the CD and we play it all the time, and we, I'm not a big Christmas music person, but I can listen to this. It's the old Charlie Brown stuff. Also, I picked up from Target, limited edition, the first Weezer, the Blue Album, which I thought was really cool. And of course it is on also on a, kind of a blue and white marbleized kind of thing going on here. It's kind of cool. Yeah, it's kind of cool. I can't get it in the these things are so hard. These 180 grams are just too thick.
That's why I just get the old ones.
Yeah. I can't stand the thickness. So that's what I picked up this week, and I haven't actually got to listen to this yet. But I'm going to sit down and actually start listening to some records here pretty soon. So
what did you pick up, Bill?
All I got this week, and this is kind of an odd thing. I used to work in a record store back in 1986 and 7. I worked in a record store, and the guy that the store I worked in here in town was an older guy, and he would only let you play jazz in the store till he left, and then we'd break out other stuff. But typically, it was only jazz. But I loved the job. It was a great job. I used to read, you know, Billboard front to back, and knew what was coming out when. And I really enjoyed it. It was a great time. But I bought a record I listened to all the time in the store, and this is Al Jarreau. And this is Bricking Away. It's got We're In This Love Together. So if you can think back to that song, it's a great song. So I listened to it the other night. My 22-year-old came home. He goes, what the hell is this on the turntable? Like, just shut up and listen to it.
Yeah. That Al Thoreau is like the Herb Albert whipped cream album. That's in every thrift store and every used store in multiples.
Yeah. I finally just pulled the trigger on it. So I'm like, whatever. I'm just like, whatever. So Ronnie, what do you collect records? I mean, I don't know much about you guys from that perspective. I just know you're selling. Do you collect too?
I collect also. I used to just collect. I sold my first record about 14 months ago, and that was one of the hardest things I ever did. And I've been doing it ever since. My collecting, you know, my daughter's 21. You know, when you have a kid and responsibilities, I can't afford to collect anymore as like I used to. I still buy stuff. I just picked this up until I could find an original. Rodriguez, Searching for Sugar Man. I highly recommend you caption the documentary. It was just unbelievable. And real quick, I used to work in a record store. I worked with one of these guys. One of my favorite bands is Norman Bates and the Showerheads. Hardcore punk fun, really fun stuff. But I don't collect as much. I used to be a completist, and I'm not anymore.
I have seen that thing you're talking about, the Sugarman. I have seen that documentary. It's interesting.
You saw it or you've seen of it?
No, I've seen it on. It was on Netflix, I believe, right. And watched it. It was very, very interesting. My father-in-law was telling me about it.
Very interesting. And so I immediately got, I'm very impulsive. I immediately ordered the record because finding the original is going to be close to impossible. And it just blew me away.
Cool. It's a great album. What kind of music is it? Is it jazz type stuff or what?
No, it's Rodriguez, him and an acoustic guitar for the most part.
Got you.
He was from New York, Detroit, and I don't think he sold one record in the United States, and he sold hundreds of thousands, if not millions, in South Africa.
Wow, that's cool. He's a
superstar in South Africa, and very, very early 70s, good stuff, really meaningful, good stuff.
Yeah, Bill, it should be on net. It was either on Netflix or Amazon is where I saw it. But okay. It was on.
I'm always looking for those things for sure.
Documentaries are interesting.
So. Yeah. Anyway. So Gary and Vonna, do you guys collect or are you, I know you have a store. So talk about the store. I want to hear about that a little bit.
Store started from collecting. So it was one of those, okay, I had collected and collected and collected. And I had two, three copies of this. Okay, well, let's start selling the extras. Well, I thought this store was going to be, you know, like you have your little booth set up in the antique mall and you have a little space with like two tables or whatever. Well, it evolved into this. So it became, okay, well, now that we have a store, we don't have anything to fill this store. So now we're buying collections instead of my 2 second copy coming in here or my extra going in here to sell. All of a sudden it became, now we're buying basements. So, I mean, it was almost, it's an addiction for sure. That's
absolutely.
I mean, it's great buying collections. And then now I own them all until I sell them, I guess, right? So isn't that how that works? This whole thing's my collection until I sell them.
That's what happened to me. It's the exact same thing. I was selling my records because my collection just got out of control and my wife wanted some of her basement back. So that's the reason I was selling records. But then, you know, the collector in me still buys collections. And then when you buy a collection, it's like, you can't stop. And so I've been selling records for 14 months to get rid of my records. And I think my collection is tripled in size in the last year.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. But, you know, I love selling it. I love putting them in the hands of people that are going to enjoy it. And more people are showing up that are just enjoying this hobby, and it's a passion. And how lucky are we, Gary Vanna, that we could turn a hobby and a passion into a couple of bucks in our pocket.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Right. Yeah.
It's the best way to put money in your pocket is to do something that you're passionate about and love doing.
So yeah, when you guys, I'm sorry, Bill, when you guys get a collection, say you're always looking for collections, and I have the same, there's a place down here that I go to, the book broker, and they have people that come in, and you know, he tries to keep the store up, you know, to a certain point, but they do books and videos and also, but he's the record guy. So of the collections that you find or the people come to you, how many of the, say out of 10 of those, how many are the really good collections? I mean, I'm sure you get somebody that, you know, say you got all the Herb Albert, the whipped cream, everything that everybody's got, and half of them are scratched, and they're not worth even making dinner plates out of them because they're just scratched up beyond belief. And then you have these really nice collections of people who took care of their stuff. How does that work out percentage wise? I'm sure that the good ones are few and far between.
They can be. I if I had to give it a number, I'd say I do very well on about 40%. But I don't do bad on the other 60%. This was a foolish purchase. I bought 700 classical records about 2 months ago for $60. Oh. And the reason I did it was because cardboard mailers cost more than that. And I use records to protect the records that I ship. So it was a win-win. And I've sold some of the classical records. So
yeah,
that 40% is good to really good. And then you get that 5% that's like, holy shit.
Yeah,
because I actually bought a collection whenever I bought this. I bought a old console stereo, and the guy just gave me a bunch of records that he had. Now, out of those records, there was probably 200. I maybe got 30 really nice records out of that were, you know, VG Plus and decent rock records. But there was a ton of old movie soundtracks. Sing Along with Mitch, that kind of stuff like that. I'm sure those records are not worth nothing. I mean, I'm just like I said, they're fillers.
Fillers for sure. But it, sometimes you, I mean, I went on a pick and I advertised that I'm looking for collections.
Sure.
And this woman called me up. And I went to her job because she had her records in the warehouse. She had about 4,000 records, and honestly, that wasn't two that I wanted, and so I had to pass because I just didn't have the means to take them.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are plenty that look like they threw it on the concrete floor and just twisted for a while, right. And a lot of times there's really, really like, you know, gold mine records that you're looking, you can't believe you found, and you pull it out of the sleeve and it's completely useless.
Yeah, that's the thing about vinyl. I'd say our luck is probably out here in California, we have a lot less of a percentage. I mean, we're talking, people out here have storage issues, okay? A lot of the Midwesterners have basements. A lot of maybe the East Coasters have basements. People have their record collections in a basement. It's a little bit cooler, more humid environment. You know, yeah, maybe you're talking about moldy records, right? You pull that record out and it smells moldy. Out here, it doesn't. It smells like a dry, dusted up, somebody sandpapered it because they left it in their shed out in 120-degree weather. And you pull it out and the thing just, you can see it going like this and you're like, no. So our luck has been worse out here. My percentages of getting collections here are, God, I'd say maybe a 20%. 20% are good.
Yeah.
And the other 80% shit that we go look at. So that's why I don't, you know, people that follow us on Facebook, we took the RV trip. We went from California to Wisconsin and grabbed records all everywhere in between. So, I mean, we were grabbing, if somebody was advertising a collection somewhere in the local whatever, we stopped and looked at it if it looked good. And if it was good, we grabbed it. So there's a lot better stuff in the Midwest, on the East Coast. It's better. It's more well taken care of.
The quality is better.
The quality of the media itself. So
strictly because of storage, is that what you...
I think it's storage, and I think a lot of it has to do with out here, the culture is different. I mean, the culture out here is more of a DJ partying, whatever you think of LA and clubs and whatever kind of vibe, rather than like the guy that sits in his basement and listens to his Pink Floyd album. I mean, there's a different culture. It's a different way of everybody that comes into the store here. They're not all looking for Metallica, Cinderella. I'm looking up at the board there, Twisted Sister, Ozzy, right? But I've had people come in and they specifically want 12-inch singles and they want DJ stuff. And it's like, that's still a thing out here. And it's still a big club scene. And it's not your typical, I want my Bob Seger album kind of thing. So there's a difference there too. You're not going to find like the good Pink Floyd collections and that good classic rock stuff out here, because it's just not what's out here. I have a theory about it, but it's just a theory. My parents, I'm from Wisconsin. We moved from Wisconsin and they left their records because they didn't want to tote them. So I think a lot of migrants, people that moved from the Midwest, whatever, I'm going to California, I'm going to where the weather's nice, whatever the case may be, not going to lug their 10 crates of records. They're just going to leave them.
Well, and they're not going to, I think that people in the Midwest, you know, in the winter when it's snowing and they can't go outside, they listen to their vinyl. Out in California, it doesn't work that way. It's like people are just out doing things all the time. I don't think people take as good a care of their vinyl in California, because a lot of the records we get, if somebody, we look at a collection, they're all scratched or they're just, they don't have an inner sleeve, or they're just in really, really bad shape.
Yeah.
So, we get that too. We get that here too. And as collectors, I'm sure you do the same thing. We look at these collections and we're like, I don't understand how people treat records like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But I went on a pick about a month ago. I left the house on a phone call for 100 records. By the time I got there, there was 700. And every record was in a plastic sleeve. And every record had hype stickers and shrink wrap.
Nice.
And I knew it. You know, I could feel the vibe coming off the guy. He was a collector. I told this story. And so I had to know. I'm doing it, but I could never sell, you know, the records that I'm really attached to. And he was getting rid of everything. I said, I'm just going to ask. I said, you take me beautiful care of this. Obviously, you're a collector. It's a passion. Why are you selling these to me? Well, I put them all on cassette.
Wow.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I said, take my money and let me get the hell out of here, because I don't want to care.
Lucky you.
Well, the joke is, too, that you were talking about that earlier. That is Southern. That was Southern California, and it was also, you know, what a teenage kid did in Indiana when they didn't really give a shit. And every bit of my record collection that I had when I was a kid, which I had a shitload of records, they're in a box. I mean, they're keepsakes, because I've had Gene sign some of my Kiss albums and stuff like that. I wouldn't dare put them on my record player now. And then inner sleeves are gone. Trust me, all these things, I just gave Bill his record back that I just
brought from him. No, you didn't. You didn't give it back.
No, it's still here. It's still here. It's still here.
But it was sitting in a – so quick funny story. We were talking about loaning people records and all this other kind of stuff a couple of weeks ago on the show, And then all of a sudden he's in a box in his garage. We've known each other since like 1985, 84. And
yeah, 84.
He's like, he pulls out and we were talking about a Judas Priest record. He pulls out, he's got my damn Judas Priest record. It's got my name on the cover.
Inner sleeve's gone too. I don't know where
yeah,
it went.
Great. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate that.
Still in pretty good shape. But the thing is though, I'm one of them people though. I have 400 and, it's not a big collection. It's 420 something albums that are pristine in plastic.
That's a big size, 420 something.
Yeah, that's good size.
Yeah.
For a collection.
That's what she said.
We missed that one. What was it?
When I hear 420, I don't think of records.
Yeah. It's like we think of California.
Yeah. That's
what I get in the collection on a week.
Right.
Yeah, I'm up to like 380, I think, something like that.
But I've got a whole shitload of other stuff that are just, like I said, they're so scratched up. But I'm not going to throw them away because they're, they were the records that I grew up on. And I've actually rebought every one of those. I found another copy of it or bought a new copy of it. So it's just one of those things, but I'm not going to throw away the old one, because it just, it has sentimental value.
A good example of not throwing records away because they have sentimental value. My Kiss Originals record collection looks like it got played with a grinder. Because every one of those records are so scratched up. It looks like somebody took it and played Frisbee with it across the street several times.
And that's funny because
I wonder how that happened.
I mentioned earlier with my Kiss Originals, if I knew then what I know now, my Kiss Army sticker from that set is still on my door in my mother's apartment.
Wow. Now, that's pretty cool though.
That is cool.
Yeah. I used to make book. You remember how I used to put covers on your textbooks when you were in school?
Yeah.
I used to make book covers out of the inner sleeves. So that's why a lot of mine didn't have. But I had the coolest books, man. I had a Quiet Riot, book, and I had a Kiss, reading English book. And so I used to use the inner sleeves to make my book covers. So I used to
write my names on my albums, so I'm one of those.
My whole CD collection is like that.
Name on the top, yep.
Yeah, I'm looking at my Destroyer record, and right where the cover starts fading into the yellow and orange. It says B Algae on it.
It's hanging on my wall.
It's like,
on mine, actually.
And my Judas Priest record that he's got, it's got my name on it. He held it up on here and it's got my Bill name. Algae. I'm like,
here's a real quick question. Cause you're record people. So when I had these, Kathy sends me her records that whenever I buy them from her in New York, she puts them, they're in plastic. But she puts them outside of the cover in the thing. Is that just to keep it from getting a ring around the covers? Is that the way you should do it? I mean, I don't know. I'm like,
God, that could be about a 3-day discussion depending upon who you're talking to. Right. But gotcha. Me personally, I store my records that way because I don't want the record to make the ring on the jacket.
Okay.
For shipping purposes, I think it's so that you're not getting any more sleeve marks or any more paper scuffs with it being inside the sleeve while the mailman's throwing it around using it as a frisbee or whatever. It's not shifting inside the record. So if you have a really nice inner sleeve, it's not getting shifted around with the record. I mean, that's pretty much what my thought process is. I mean, I don't know. What do you think, Ronnie? Is that shipping outside the sleeve, and
I know that the experts say that that's how you're supposed to ship, but this thing right here just doesn't freaking get it. I don't understand the concept. I can't imagine that the record is safer out of the protective album cover. So and I wrap my records pretty good, so and I've never had an issue. Ever, but I can't process.
Are you knocking on that wood noggin ears or what?
Knocking on wood.
But I'm just,
Yeah. We put them in the outer sleeves in our store so that.
Yeah, this is a totally different reason.
Right. So that when someone wants to look at the record to see if it's in good shape, they don't have to pull it out of the sleeve. It's already right. in
they're
that.
They're not destroying the sleeve.
Yes,
they're
it's
not,
in that outer. They can just, and you can even look at one side because, you know, they're transparent on one side. And then it makes it easier for the customer.
So as a collector, though, we should just put them back in the sleeves and be normal people. I mean,
whatever
that's
whatever you want to do. So I keep mine. So here's Cosmos Factory, right?
Okay.
This is a MoFi. But I would store it. This is how I would store it on my shelf.
Oh, you store it like that. Okay.
I'd store it like this. But let me tell you why. Number one, I think that, but this, like Ronnie said, maybe this is not the most important reason for ring wear. Right. I don't want any ring wear. I don't want the other records making a ring, you know, but theoretically, I guess it could do it from the back. Well, I like to just be able to grab my record, put it on the turntable, play it, and not disturb this inner sleeve. If this wasn't a MoFi, MoFi's come with this rice paper sleeve, but I have all mine in these rice paper sleeves.
Right.
If this was like, let's say, a Metallica first press with the original inner sleeve, which is the, you know, nice looking color, whatever. I don't want to pull that in and out and tear it, rip it, do anything with it because I want to play the record. So I want to leave this all intact and leave it alone because you don't play the cover. So now your cover stays intact and you play your record and you slide it right back in when you're done. That's just my personal playing, you know what I mean? My collection. So I have the same mentality at the store. If somebody wants to pull a record out and look at it and say, oh, yeah, that's really nice looking, they can do that easier. They're not pulling out the sleeve, tearing it and ripping it and trying. And then they try to shove it. You just said earlier in the show, I can't get these back in there. You know, then they're just jamming it in there and shoving them in. And then
they don't put it in there. Then they find it inside the album.
So
in no sleeve.
So from the record store point of view, I think it's a lot easier. People can flip through and then they can just pull the record out, look at it and go, yeah, that's nice. And even if they want to pull the record out and look to see if it has the inner sleeve, they can just set that rice paper thing down wherever and look, you know what I mean? And look through it and inspect it rather than tear the whole thing apart. And then they're ripping the sleeve and trying to pull the album out, and maybe putting paper scuffs more on the record than it already had. And it just seems a little easier to inspect That's just my thinking. I mean, like I said, we could do this for days. Depends on who you ask, right?
Well, it's interesting, too, because the place that Dennis was talking about going, I've been there a couple of times, a book broker, and he has it sealed up. You can't look at the record.
I hate that.
And I freaking hate it.
But he promises. Actually, he lets me look at it.
Yeah, he says he's their guarantee.
He knows me, so he lets me do it. So,
well, but when I was in there the last time, he was like, I went to open it. He says, what are you doing? I told him I'm opening it to check it out. And he said, well, I guarantee that they're all great. And if you're not satisfied, just bring it back. Well, I live 3 hours away.
Yeah.
So
I'd be like, no, sorry.
But the thing that he does is he puts a price tag and he puts sticker price tag and then puts clear tape over that price tag. Right on the front cover.
Vanna's got it. She's like rolling her eyes.
Now,
like,
he swears to God that they come off really easy. Well, if you watched three shows ago, I pulled three of my covers of nice records, pulled the fucking front off it. And I'm like,
you have to take some heat. We have a little heat machine we put on there, and it'll melt the.
Actually, that or just lighter fluid. And a little bit on the cloth, it'll take it off.
I've been scared to do that because
I tried it. My father-in-law he's a collector and stuff, and he's got DVDs and stuff. And he says, it works really good. I just don't have lighter fluid around.
I'd be the one that end up with the spot on the cover.
Right. Yep.
You know, because you.
I always thought, you know, if you want to put a price tag on it, put it on a, you know, either get a sleeve, put the price tag on there, get a post-it, whatever you got to do. But me and him have went round and round about these damn stickers, and I don't know. One of these days, I think
two people just, you know, they don't want to take a chance of someone switching it if it's an expensive album or whatever. So.
Well, and they're not expensive albums.
Yeah.
But they're decent albums. But that's the problem with it's the part of town that they're in. people come in there and they try to switch tags and then do stuff like that. It's like, oh,
hey, you're talking about my neighborhood now.
No, you should move.
I will in 6 years.
There you go.
So, South. I have a question for all three of our guests, and because I'm a gentleman, I'm going to ask the lady to go first. What do you guys are you guys currently listening to?
I am currently looking for and collecting a group called Tigers of Pantang.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm looking for, in fact, I have just happen to have one right here.
Ooh.
This one's crazy nice, but I'm looking for to collect all their records. So that's kind of what I'm listening to and looking for at cool. present.
Gary?
You get plenty of stuff in that you can dig through.
Yes, for sure.
Right now, I'm on a JJ Cale kick because JJ Cale is hard to find on vinyl. I mean, it's funny because you go on Discogs and you look around and you're like, yeah, I could find one. See? Yeah, no, I got that one, smart ass.
I knew what he was doing.
2 days ago. And
Ronnie, start over because whatever you said, you were getting drowned out.
Sorry.
Yeah, start over.
I found this 2 days ago in a collection. And so I'm grading records tonight. And it's kind of iffy. It's got a lot of non-feelers on it. And I'm not comfortable selling it. So I'm just putting it in my collection. And that's how my collection grows. Is if because like as Gary does and basically every seller in the auction community, we guarantee everything we sell. Because we're only as successful as our reputation, and so I try not to start behind the starting line by shipping out a record that's questionable to begin with. So that's why I now own that JJ Cale, and it's not going to leave the house.
And then now you will start collecting because you started with that one, and you'll hear how good that one is, and then now you're going to want. Yeah.
So that's how it sometimes is, you know, you find, I know JJ Cale, I've heard his stuff, but I've never listened to JJ Cale.
Right.
You know, I've never put his album on and listened to it from beginning to end. But
that's
I will now.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's for me how all of this started. It was like, okay, well, I'm going to get the newest whatever album. And then you start looking at the older albums. And then you start looking at the older stuff that they did. Then you look at Fleetwood Mac is a really good example. Look at all the lineup changes that were on Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
And I mean, all you can go back and you can see when Peter Green was with Fleetwood Mac, it wasn't even close to, you know what I mean? It's like things have progressed and changed. And go back and
right, they're like three different bands.
Yeah, exactly. So it starts that whole, I guess what would be the word, obsession?
Yeah. That's a good word for you.
She's always patting me on, says this is just your obsession. Newest obsession.
It's an addiction. It's an addiction.
Addiction, that too.
Yep. Yeah.
If I had a record store, I'd be like going, sorry, this is mine.
I do that. We do that.
Mine. How many times do I do that?
He does. Mine. And then he goes, no, I'm going to sell it. So
I just like to hold on to it for a week. And then I'll say, just so I could say I had that. Like I'm looking up. When you see me looking up, I'm looking up at the wall, you know, the wall, the stuff at the top. That's all the like high-end stuff. And you're like, yeah, I got that. And it's like, till someone comes in and buys it.
Someone bought something this weekend that's empty over there.
Yeah, there's a spot missing over there. What's going on?
I think it was a Pink Floyd.
It was Pink Floyd. It was Momentary Lapse of Reason.
Yeah.
So that one's gone. But I could say I had it, you know. It's funny, though, because, you know, me and Ronnie are really on the same page because you go from being like this collector who – it's just like mine. I'm keeping them all to realizing you can't keep them all. And you have to let some of them go and, you know, just sell them to people that are going to appreciate them. And that's why the live auction thing is so much more personable than just say putting something up on a for sale poster and saying, here, this is for sale. I mean, we get to know these people that come into our auctions, and we get to know their music taste, and we get to know their lifestyle and what they like. And then we go and get a collection, and we're like, oh, so-and-so is going to like this.
Yeah.
So-and-so is going to like that. I think so-and-so will like this. And pretty soon you're not even shopping for your store yourself. You're shopping for your clientele,
right?
Like your customers that you know, buy from you every week. So.
I don't shop to myself really hardly ever at all. This was in the collection that I got with the JJ Kale. It's a first press saucer full of secrets.
Nice.
First press. I would love to have it. And I have it, but I know others are going to appreciate it more. And like Gary said, our buyers, the community is very small, and everybody knows everybody for the most part. And our buyers almost, they're our friends. I mean, but like friends. I have people know I'm a t-shirt junkie. 10 people have sent me t-shirts. I got a cheese box from a buyer in Wisconsin.
Nice.
They send just nice stuff, and we do the same for them.
Right.
It's different. You know, in a store, you're not going to see the same people all the time. You know, you might have a regular come in every week, but most people come in every 2-3 weeks, maybe a month or two. We deal with the same people on a every single week basis.
Every week, yeah.
And yeah, they're faithful watchers.
Yeah, we had one of our watchers send us, because I mentioned that I couldn't find the Gordon Lightfoot, the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. And so what do I get in the mail a couple weeks later? That album. And wow. From a customer that heard us say that we couldn't find it, you know, I mean, Gordon Lightfoot has a lot of records out there, and to find one with the Edmund Fitzgerald was difficult for us. We couldn't find it. And so we thought that was pretty cool. But, you know, we're always doing stuff like that for our customers too. We'll hear them, you know, we'll pick up something and say, oh yeah, so-and-so would like that, and just throw it in their box just because, you know, because they're good buyers.
One of my most often compliments that I get, and I don't even think that was a fucking English sentence, but the most compliments I get, they'll send me a picture and they'll go, Ronnie, I got the record. Thank you so much. But the fillers are killer. And I swore I would never ever say that. No filler or killer. I think that's ridiculous. But anyways, they rave because not all my filler records are scratched and useless. They're just stuff that I just either I don't think I could sell, or I do a show every week. For me, it's a show. And if I look at a record, if I'm holding it, if I don't feel it, I can't sell it. And so I throw it in. And so, you know, I wouldn't do that to a stranger, but these people aren't strangers to us anymore.
Right.
Yeah. To your point, Ronnie, you know, I think that's why I've started watching. I really watch YouTube probably more regularly than anybody else, just because I just like the show. It's engaging. It moves. You know, I've watched a couple of them before. It's like, you've got, and to Dennis's point earlier, just move. Let's go. You know, you got to sell more than, you know, one record an hour.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
we're gonna put them out quick.
Yeah. Come on, let's go. Yeah. And, but you know, I think I like the camaraderie and the discussion. You know, there's a discussion back and forth, and you guys pick up stuff that people have, you know, posted and say, oh yeah, and you get into some discussion with other folks. I think that really makes a big deal. I think Ronnie, the first time I watched you, I know the thing that caught me was I don't want to sell it, but so talk a little bit about how that came around.
That's well, because there are, on any given night, there are 20 auctions, and tomorrow there's going to be 25, and next week there's going to be 30. And I always say it, almost every auction, for the most not every auction, but for the most part, we all have the same records, right? So why are you buying? You know, it's like going to the bagel store. You know, the bagels are the same, but you go for the service. So I need to shake up my show every week. I need to do something different. And if you if one of the first times you see my show is I don't want to sell it, but then you might have missed quite a bit of different that I do. But it's a fun way and a sneaky way to ask for more money than I should get for a record. That's all.
It works.
I saw what was happening on Discogs, you know, and that's how I explain it. You know, there's 20 of this record on Discogs. The first one is $1,000 and every other one is $20. Right? Because the guy puts it up for $1,000 figuring, I don't want to sell it. But if someone gives me $1,000, it's out the door. So it's an extreme, but so if records are selling for $50-$60 and there's a nice copy for $300, I take 20% off and I said, I don't want to sell it. But, and I'm probably batting 500 with that.
See, what I find too is too, you get this almost kind of like these storage war mentalities. People have watched this stuff online, you know, on TV and stuff. And I watch these and the ones that I've watched, you see these records and you know, I know what they're going to go for. And I kind of think there's a place I'm going to pay for. I'm going to go this far. Right. And it gets that far. And then I'm pulling the, yep. Yep. Now I bought a couple albums, a lot more money that I didn't want to, just because I was yupping these people up, you know. And I hate to say that, but sometimes it kind of pisses me off. It's like I'm like going, I know you're doing it to me, so now I'm going to do it to you, kind of thing. And I think that gets a lot of the albums. That's why I kind of stopped watching for a while, because I got to the point where albums were going for way more than what they were worth. It's like, holy shit. I mean, this is, they're not worth that much. You know, it's like, I'm just not going to pay that much. And I was watching them and I was like going, well, nope, I'm done. You know, and after about two or three, you know, bids, I'm done. And absolutely. I don't yup them anymore, but I think a lot of it gets into that point, especially some of these 80s albums that you get in, you know, they're, you know, just, you know, a lot of times finding these albums yourself at a store and you just find it and you come across it and then you got it and you get it for a decent price, that's cooler than just trying to buy it outright on some of the auctions, because more some exciting. Of these things just go just ridiculous.
Nothing more exciting than coming across a record you've been looking for in a store.
Exactly.
The hunt is always better than the catch.
Right.
So, my example is for 7 years, I was looking for David Johansen from the New York Dolls. I was looking for his first solo album. And for 7 years, I couldn't find it. And so every record store I went to, and back then, I was going to 6 different used record stores every week. When I found it, it was like, yay, I got it. Now... It's like I lost my purpose in life because I found what I was so invested to find. I found it. Now what?
So now that leads, actually, it kind of might answer my next question. Do you guys have a Holy Grail album? Ronnie, go first.
I don't. I have a lot of records that I truly enjoy. There's nothing, anything right now, my obsession is J.J. Gray. So anything J.J. Gray out there would be a grail to me if I found something that I didn't have. I love J.J. Gray. But otherwise, there's nothing I'm looking for. Like I said earlier, I'm kind of past being a collector. I have what I have, and I need to get rid of multiple thousands of records because I don't need them all. And so my grail is J.J. Gray, and that's real. Also, that's a lie. I do have one grail. One grail is Born to Run, the script cover. There's a version of Born to Run, and instead of in block letters, it's written in script on the cover. That's a grill.
There you go. What about you, Gary?
I'm with Ronnie on that one. I don't really have a grail anymore. I mean, I stopped collecting so much, like, looking for myself. Like Ronnie said, you know, we don't shop for ourselves anymore. And so, for me, if I see it, like, I'll watch other shows. I not only do I do the shows, but I still watch all the other shows. And I, you know, if somebody brings something up, and I mean, I really don't have a grail anymore, but if I see something that's rare and weird, I mean, I almost pulled the trigger the other night somebody had a lynch mob but it was big money. And I thought, man, you know, I might pull the trigger on that, because that's a hard one to get. You're not going to see that one anymore. And I was this close. But then I realized, you know what? I got too much. So I'd have to say I don't really have a grail anymore. I mean, I just run across these cool records and these collections, and I say, hey, you know, that's cool. I haven't seen that one in a long time. And so you kind of are looking at these going, well, that's kind of a cool grail, or that's kind of a cool, I haven't seen that in a while. I mean, it's funny that you talk about Enough's Enough, because I just ran across one of those in a collection. I'm like, I haven't seen that in a while. You know what I mean? So, and it's just, that's, for me, it's more about how exciting it is that I can offer this stuff to whoever it is that's looking for it, is more the thrill for me now. So, like I said, it's gone from like collecting to selling, as far as so-and-so's going to love this, this guy's going to love that, this guy's going to love this. I can't wait to see so-and-so's reaction when I hold this one up or whatever. And I do a lot of behind the scenes sales for the record store that people are just like, where'd you find that? And you know, there's, so it's not all auction, but I did, well, I'm going to let you do your grail if you want.
No, and I wanted to comment. I don't really have a grail. So
nothing?
No, not really.
Other than the Six Kings albums.
Oh, well, I do have
six. She just collects every copy of the Kings. If she gets one, mine. She's got like six or seven.
I do have
now.
Six oh. copies.
So that's New the England. Equivalent of Dennis in New England.
New England. And I know you guys probably have 10 copies of that at your store.
New so. England?
Yeah, the original album.
Oh, yeah, I got, yeah.
I find them for $2, $3. I buy it every I have six copies of it. But it was one of my favorite albums.
They must have pressed like 40 million of those damn things.
You know what? And I got five of them. And I know that Ritz has got probably, what, 12 of them, 14 of them?
I have one. I'm still trying to give it away.
Hey, you know what, though? Talking about the grail, Bill, do you have a grail?
You know, I was, whenever he started thinking about that, or talking about that, I don't really know. I mean, I tell you, I was so pissed at myself the other night. So when I watched, it's happened on each one of you guys' shows, actually. I watched Ronnie's show last time, and the Joe Satriani, he had the Surfing with the Alien record, and I had that record back in the day. And, you know, I was bidding with this other guy. You probably have it, you bastard.
No, I didn't. but,
you know, I was bidding with this other guy, and it got to like $25, which really isn't that much. But I was just sitting there, and I was like, I don't know if I want to pay $25. And I just sat there for a minute, and my phone went off, and I looked at something else, and then turned around, and all of a sudden it was over. And I was like, oh, shit. I just, you know, it's, so that's one that I've really been looking for in the stores. So there is some of that stuff, but, you know, I don't know.
There's
that
there's something that you really want to get from your, I tell you what I would like to find. Kelly actually found me an Kiss Originals about a year ago. And it was at a coffee shop down in downtown Evansville. The records aren't the best of shape. They do have the covers for them, but it didn't have the booklet.
Yeah, I would like to find a real.
I want to find a real nice intact originals. That's the only thing I really don't have that I'd like to have.
Yeah, there's some other stuff. I mean, I've got a list of stuff that I'm still looking for, but that Joe Satriani.
Bucks.
What's that?
Yeah,
that's going to cost you some serious bucks.
Oh yeah, it's going to it's going to be, you know, it is what it is, but. And I don't have a double platinum either, but I don't really care about that because Strutter 78 is not worth it.
You have the gun and the bullets from Love Gun.
What's that?
I have.
Do you have gun and bullets from Love Gun?
I have the gun. I have the gun with the paper sleeve. Yeah.
Yeah, I have the. I have the gun, but it's got like masking tape on it, and it looks like shit.
Yeah. Right. I played Cowboys and Indians with mine. So
yeah, I did too. The thing was, I used everything. If it was a sticker or a tattoo or whatever it was, right. I used the damn thing, and I played the record. That's right. What we did.
Mine obviously didn't get back into the album because my Love Gun has nothing.
Yeah. Alan, do you have a Holy Grail?
Why, as a matter of fact, I do. It would be the Ace Frehley, Frehley's Comet album with all of the original signatures.
Yeah, really? I wonder why.
That's the only one you have, and you have them.
That was a cool event, and was a cool chance to get that. Funny. I actually picked that record up once and put it back, and I'm like, I'm not going to buy this.
Gary and Ronnie don't know the story. The very first Rockin' Pod we went to in Nashville, my friend Mike saw the Frehley's Comet album for like $7 or $9, or it was really cheap, but it had John Reagan and Todd Howarth's autographs on it. So I went over and bought it just because it had the autographs, never thinking anything of it. And then a couple of years later, Ace Frehley and Anton Figg both showed up at the Indianapolis Kiss Expo. And the only reason that I went to the expo was because Anton Figg was there. So I got Ace and Anton to sign that. So.
And Todd and John were actually there too. So it was kind of like a complete reunion. That
well,
night.
We even got to see the reunion show.
Yeah.
Bruce Kulick guy.
Yeah. So Alan has met Bruce, has worked with Bruce before.
So Alan, so here's just a real quick Bruce story. I've seen Bruce with when he joined probably my all-time favorite band, which Rolling Stone called the greatest band nobody knows about, and that was the Good Rats.
Oh.
And a friend of mine was telling us a story one day, just I was because you guys were talking about the Blackjack album a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
And so I was telling him about that, and because he said he knew Bruce. He played softball with Bruce. And then Bruce shows up one Saturday and he tells them, he said, guys, this is my last week. And they said, why, what's going on? He said, I'm going on tour with Kiss. And so they threw shit at him and they laughed at him and they said, shut the fuck up. And then 2 weeks later, they saw that he was on tour with Kiss.
That's awesome.
There you go.
That is awesome.
And you know what? Ronnie, the way he talks, he actually watches our show. I can't believe that. That's actually cool.
Well,
or listens to it at least.
I told him you might want to watch one to get, know what he's getting himself
into. Oh, that
into.
Was the only one he watched. Okay, there you go. I'll give him that cred.
I had another question too. So how do you, is there a record that you guys have had on the auction, on your auctions, that went for way more than you thought it would ever go for? And was there one that you thought would just be gangbusters and just went flat? Apparently, Gary's
shaking.
That happens a lot.
That happens quite often. You get excited. You think this is, I mean, and even Ronnie knows, right? Because Ronnie messaged me. He said, this is one of my, I think you said it was one of your first records you sold. I had I still have.
It was the first record I ever sold.
Yeah.
And I regret it, even though I it was a great deal on my end. I regretted selling that.
Yeah, I have a Beastie Boys original OG Paul's Boutique, and I was excited to offer that one because I thought, man, that's gonna be like, people are gonna want that. Those things are, I mean, few and far between.
Crickets.
We threw it up, crickets. Not, I mean, that we had people, I had people messaging me, when are you going to put it up? What time do you think? I mean, when give me an approximation so I can make sure I'm in your show and tag me. And so I did all those things and then I put it up, did opening bid, crickets. So now did I start it for a buck? No, but you know, it's one of those things that it's, I'm going to use Ronnie's line. I really don't want to sell this, but, okay. So, but nobody, it was just, it was, I was very surprised. Let's put it that way. Because there was so much interest and people were asking, they really wanted it. And when I put it up, put the opening bid, it was almost like, well, no, I thought you were going to open it for like 10 bucks or I thought you'd open it for, you know, when we were still way below Discogs, I mean, the cheapest one on Discogs, we were way below and it just didn't take. And that happened with an REM too. I had an REM, original REM monster, first press and so.
It happens often. I'll be honest that I couldn't tell you specifically which one, but I've had a few that go for a lot more than I thought. I've screwed up a couple of times. I bought a collection, and I paid like $8 a record for 20 records, all mint, all like brand new. And I said, all right, my buyers are going to love these and I'm going to make some money. And I brought them home and then I did the research instead of having the research in my head. And they were all available on Amazon for like 11 and 12 bucks. And I had already put them in my teaser. So come show night, first thing I said was, these guys are not in the auction. I said, I'm going to do a raffle or something. I said, I paid too much for them. I said, so I can't sell it and lose money. I said, so I'm going to raffle them. And people appreciate that honesty. And I don't like to fuck up, but I fucked up. The one record that went for more than I thought it would, but I knew it would sell, I had a copy, a Led Zepp 2 first press Robert Ludwig. The vinyl on a scale of 1 to 10 was a -50.
Yeah.
Wow. On a scale of 1 to 10 was a -20. But it was a Robert Ludwig Led Zepp 2 first press. It's unplayable, but I knew somebody would want it in their collection. I started it at $5. I said, I'm asking for $5. There was a freaking bidding war and it went for $30. For an unplayable record that I just threw there because I wanted someone to have it.
Was this the one that was one side actually when it was very, when it was new, couldn't be played on one side because it was so hot? Am I getting this wrong with some other record or not?
Actually, the whole album was mixed hot. So the whole album was hot. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. I just seen something here earlier. They said that one side of this one Led Zeppelin album was so hot that it would make the needle. You really couldn't play it because it was mixed so hot that it would make the needle jump.
Yeah, that was the first press.
That was Led Zeppelin press.
One, yeah, Led Zeppelin 1 came out. I'm pointing because there's one sitting right there. Led Zeppelin 1 came out, and then it was such a success that they went to Ludwig and they said, "Look, we want you to mix this. We want you to really get this band hot. These guys are hot right now. We want this next album to just like be just."
Dumped the needle, and he did.
And he did. He did exactly what they wanted. So, but what happened was the record execs, one of the record execs' niece played it on her little portable, you know, those little portable deals, and it made her deal skip. So they said, pull it. And that's why they're worth so much money, because from then on, he had to compress the hell out of everything. It doesn't even sound close. I mean, to be honest with you, I like the CD better because they went back to his original hot mix.
Right.
And put it on CD.
I knew that there was something.
They remastered it for CD. So.
Right. I knew there was something with that Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
Big. So is Discogs a pretty good a good guide for as far as looking when you're looking at albums? Is it fairly decent? I mean, I know eBay's not because you don't know what, you know, people can ask whatever the hell they want. But then, you know, I'm just asking you as a guy.
I'm going to let Ronnie answer that one.
Our choices are Discogs or I've been using PopSyche lately. PopSyche takes the sold price from all over and lists it. So that's a, I think that's a better barometer. Discogs is just, you know, it, you have to find the record. You have to find it in the condition you have, but then you have to look at the seller's rating, because that, that comes into play. You know, I like to think my rating is a million to my buyers, but it could be available for $10 less on Discogs for a guy that's got a 40 rating, because 60 people think he fucked them over. So that being said, Discogs is seems to be the go-to for most people. But it's either Discogs or PopSyke, unless you go to buyer collection. If you go to buyer collection, then the people selling it will always say, well, eBay has it for, and you have to say, relax there. All right. I understand what they're asking on eBay. They're asking 500 and it's going to sell for $2.30. I'm offering you less than that, obviously.
Right. So you're saying, good. What is the name that you say? It's Pop something. I couldn't hear what you said.
PopSyke.
PopSyke. Okay, great. I'm going to get that.
you put the either the catalog number or the name of the record in there. It'll tell you the month and the year it sold and for how much.
Cool. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, I'll throw my 2 cents in on the Discogs thing, but I agree 100% with Ronnie. We used to price our records in the store. We would go on Discogs. We'd look up the version. First of all, like Led Zeppelin, unless you look at the dead wax and you know exactly what version you have, there's like the price ranges from $5 to $500. So, yeah. I mean, unless you know exactly what pressing you're dealing with. But the thing I don't like is the median. Like, people will look at a median price and say, okay, well, the median on Discogs is, well, yeah, because some other dork has one for $1,000 that is way up there. And then you got this guy selling his for $2 because he's hard up for money. And the median ends up being $500 because there's only a $2 one and a $1,000 one. Well, that doesn't mean the record you have is $500. You know what I mean? So it Discogs, I found, is really not a good gauge anymore. To what we do a lot is we'll if it's a popular record, we'll go on eBay, type in the record, and then we filter it by what they sold, the amount of them sold in the last 30 days. What did they sell for? And then we do our own averaging. So if one sold for $20, one sold for $25, one sold for $22, one, you know what I mean? You get this average of what the going rate is, because obviously you're looking at ones that sold, not ones on eBay for $2,000 and they're just going to sit there for, you know, listing's going to sit there forever. You're looking at what was actually sold, and you can do all that filtering on eBay and say, I just want to see what was sold.
Right.
And we do a lot of that, like some of the harder to find albums and maybe ones that Discogs only has like 2 copies. And that good example of one guy wants $1,000 and the other guy only wants $50 or whatever. So now you got to try to find, you know, what's it really worth?
I noticed because, you know, I do all the pretty much the looking up and dead waxing of all records that are going to go for auction. And I did notice that Discogs did have an update, and their update now will tell you underneath it shows how much and what date the last, what date it sold.
That's so cool.
It does that now.
So it's a little bit of a help for sure. I like that update on Discogs.
Yeah.
But our job, my opinion of how these auctions are supposed to work is, even if the average price on Discogs is 23, if I'm a buyer, I'm coming to my auction to get a deal, not to pay what I can get it on Discogs for.
Right.
So, yeah.
So if I'm doing my job right, now, when I'm selling my collection, I have to consider that I paid, all my records are free because I bought them 40 years ago. But if I'm doing my job right, when I go out and buy collections, I should be able to start my records for considerably less than the average price most of the time, and still have a decent margin if I'm doing my job right. There are sellers out there that don't do their job right, and I can't get into what I make on a record or whatever, but I factor in what I pay. But I also, my buyers need to feel that they're getting a deal, but I can't allow my buyers to get a steal. So if I know this record has a market value, which is basically whatever the people are willing to pay for it, if it has a market value of $30, I can't start it at $3.
Right.
Yeah.
Even if I paid 10 cents for it, I can't do that because it's crazy. You know, I'm doing this for a lot of reasons, but I'd be a liar if I said I'm not doing it for the money. Mm-hmm. We're all doing it for the money. I'm doing it to make sure it makes me feel good that my records are going into the hands of people that appreciate it. I always told people from day one, I started doing it because I saw an auction and I said, I could do that. And I looked around and I have like 75 Calyx cubes and a storage unit a few miles away. And I said, you know what? If I had 4 Calyx cubes, I'd be fine. But I have a serious fucking collection. But my daughter thinks music is a DJ. So she's not getting them.
No handing down of these records, right?
So because of that, I have found that it's kind of corny, and I just made it up just a second. But so all my buyers are now my sons and daughters, and they are getting my records for a little bit more than my daughter would have gotten them for. But that's how I look at it. I'm trying to put my records in the hands of people that are, and I think all of us have been really successful because the feedback we get is that people are just really appreciative. And going back to where, you know, you said, you know, you wanted a record, but you had to go out because the bidding got crazy. It gets crazy because there's a new generation of record buyers that don't know what they're supposed to go for.
What do you think too, though, that it's also, it's people like me who were record buyers in the early years that didn't take care of their shit. And now they're going, you know what? I'm going to take care of this. And I'm rebuying basically a whole collections that I had and continuing on. Like I say, it's been about 3 years now that I've been back into, you know, I'm done with CDs. I'm done with everything that, you know, I haven't had a cassette in years,
right.
But I'm ready to buy vinyl again. And I want everything that I had before and everything I can get my hands on now on vinyl, because I'm old enough and I'm mature enough, responsible enough to have vinyl, because you have to, you have to be responsible. You know,
I never thought of it that way because my records that are 40, I'm 57. So my records that are, I bought my first record in 73. I still have it. And my records from when I started collecting are all in BG or BG plus shape.
See, mine weren't. You know, I
was the furthest thing from mature. I'm still the furthest thing from mature. I think if you're passionate about, I was always passionate about records. I guess you could be a record collector and then 40 years later become a little more passionate about it. But I think a lot of our buyers are a younger demographic.
And that's good. And that's good.
Yeah, that's cool. Actually. Yeah. I was serious about it for a long time. And then CDs came along and I kept my vinyl for a couple of years after that. And then eventually I never got them out. I'd pack my turntable away and eventually went, this is ridiculous. And so we had a yard sale and the Kiss stuff is never leaving. So that was never going to happen. But I sold, you know, that in my, there's a couple of records that I have that I kept, but for the most part, I got rid of almost all of it. And, you know, it really was then when I started collecting again and I'm buying all this stuff again, I'm like, I just want to kick myself in the butt. But I think I'm obviously taking much, much better care of it now than I was before. Yeah. And I got restarted collecting because my youngest son, you know, about 4 or 5 years ago said, "Hey, what's this in the bottom of my closet?" And it was a turntable. And we plugged it up and got it connected. And he said, "Do you have any records?" And I said, "Yeah." And so I put on the one of the original ones I had was an ACD, was Back in Black. And so I got it all connected and receiver connected and speakers and stuff like that. And I cranked it up and, you know, it's popping and cracking a little bit or whatever. And it just sounds, you know, I'm like, this sounds so freaking awesome, you know? And he plays it and he's like, what was that, Ronnie?
The pops and the cracks are what bring the warmth to the record.
Yeah.
And for people our age, we need to hear that. CDs are great. CDs are crystal clear, but it's complete. Here's the only example I can give you. Elton John, Madman Across the Water. What a great fucking album.
Excellent.
I played the shit out of it a million times. Then I'm in a store and I hear a song. I go, what is that? And it was Tiny Dancer. Now, how did I not know it was Tiny Dancer? Because it was on CD and it sounded completely freaking different.
Yep.
And not in a good way. Collectors our age appreciate that. I think also what I'm seeing now, I never bought a record that I never opened. I opened every record I ever bought. We're seeing a large amount of people mm-hmm. buy stuff that don't open it. They're buying it for investment purposes, I assume. And that's a bad thing to do,
yeah.
in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, you're
by the way, too, about, I went talking about, so I went and bought an old Pioneer. I'm showing you real quick.
Nice.
It's the old tube, you know, it's the old, you know, big high capacitor. That's what I listen to my records to. It's not this new stuff. I went all old school.
Yeah, I got rid of my digital amp too. It's all gone. You know, so it's
that worm sound. Go ahead.
Yeah. Bro. You know, to your point, Ronnie, it's Alan and I had the chance to meet Gene Simmons at a concert a couple of years ago. And I took a record for a picture for him to sign. And we were talking about vinyl, and I had a record with me, but I don't think I had him sign it, 'cause I think he just signed the picture. But we were talking about vinyl, and we were talking to a guy that owned a record store there in Fort Wayne. And we were talking to just about vinyl in general or whatever. And he said, "Why is anybody buying that stuff?" And I said, "Because it's collector. When you like it and we want to buy it." And he goes, "No, you're buying it for one reason and one reason only. You're buying it for the emotion that you're attached to that record." And I was just there and I went, damn, he is such a smart guy. Because that's what it is. It's the music and the emotion. We talk about that on the show. You get attached to that, and that's what really kind of brings you back to, you know, and I think about that every now and then. Every record I listen to or every record I've bought so far that I've repurchased, there is a story to that record. Some story, whatever it is, there's a story. And I don't know that I would buy anything that I'm not going to open, because I want to hear the story again. Because when you play it, it plays the story.
That's exactly.
And the thing is too, kids don't understand, and hopefully they will understand because of vinyl coming back. But I mean, the artwork, the inner line, you know, all the inner stuff that you had, that smell of vinyl. I mean, when I was a kid, I mean, it was to get a brand new record was an experience. And then you sit there, you looked at the liner notes, you looked at the back cover, you looked at the front cover, you know, the CD, I'm there with my bifocals going, what the fuck is this? But you know what I'm saying.
Listening to an album was an experience. And you dedicated 100% of yourself to listening to the album. And look at the liner notes and the jacket. Now, kids, you know, forget if they're streaming. If they pop in a cassette or a CD, even an album now.
On two today. Songs. Yeah.
They put it in, and then they're on their phone, or they're doing this, or they're doing that, and it seems that the music is background music now, instead of it was all we had.
Yep. I agree.
Yeah, I agree. Well, hey guys, I really appreciate you guys taking some time to be on the show with us tonight. It's been, we like to keep them to about an hour. We ran a little bit over and want to be respectful of you guys' time too, but it's been a great discussion. So I really appreciate it. Ronnie, you want to pimp your stuff for your show, and then we'll let Gary, I'd say we'll let Vonna pimp Gary's show. I don't, it's their show. So we'll let them
That's
do theirs.
Like
so it. Go ahead, Ronnie.
Well, you weren't joking when you said the first time you watched my show was I don't want to sell it, but because I've been pimping a lot of shit, and you don't want to even see anything that I want to pimp out right now. you can see me from here down. YouTube might kick you out. look, I'm on almost every Thursday night on Sell, Trade, Buy Vinyl Records. If that's the name of it, we never know what the name of that page is because it's worded weird. But it's Sell, Trade, Buy Vinyl Records. I'm on Thursday nights, usually 7 o'clock. I take a week off here and there. And it's a show, you know. I do it because I enjoy doing it. And I give you a good show, and hopefully you get some good records. And we have fun. That's what it's about for me. Thank you. I just ended a sentence with thank you. I've never done that in my life. Thank you. Let me try. Thank you.
All right.
Hey, Gary.
You pimp it.
Yes, I'm pimping the show. So we sold for, about a year?
Mm-hmm.
I'd say, what do you think, Ronnie, about a year? On Sell, Trade, Buy Records. So definitely check that out and check Ronnie's show out. We decided that we're going to start selling from Zenith Records, which is our store. We want to promote our store. We want to kind of be able to have your brothers, sisters, cousins, roommates, whatever, be able to click, you know, share this video. It's a lot easier to do with an open page than a closed group. It's just that's more of our reasoning. It had nothing to do with, you know, we didn't like it on Sell, Trade, Buy. We love Sell, Trade, Buy. So check Ronnie's show out. Zenith Records, we're on Facebook. It's spelled with a Z. We're going to start doing shows, pop-up shows. We got a lot of stuff in here. We got picture sleeve 45s. We've got cassettes. We've got
video games.
We've got Deep Purple concert posters, Deep Purple tour shirts. I mean, just things that are, you know, not necessarily all vinyl, but just different music stuff. So we want to start expanding out and doing, you know, that kind of stuff. But Zena's Records with a Z, not an X, a Z.
Yeah.
Cool. And we've been doing this for Wednesday night has always been our night. We're going to continue to do it Wednesday night. So people are looking for us too on some kind of show Wednesday night. So watch for us on Wednesday, and then we'll just pop up every once in a while with a cassette show or a 45 show or a Christmas show, whatever it may be. So we'll probably be doing a little bit more frequently than once a week.
Right.
So got a lot. Cool. So, but thank you guys for
actually
having
put me. All your stuff in our feed for this show also, because yeah. I want to get both of you guys marked and checked, so my Wednesday and Thursday nights will be
sold up.
Awesome.
Busy. Busy. So don't leave yet. Hang around for a second. Alan, you want to take us out of here with all the stuff?
Visit us on agentsofrock.com. Check out our social media and our past episodes. And until next time, peace out, folks. Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.